Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets at the Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlin Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Break on through with Pam on Friday, then join Babla and the Faceyan on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And Sunday's a split between Dex and Pam, bringing you Once Upon a Time and delving deep into the darkness with Arcana and Lulu. These shows are designed so you can come outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. What's up?
Not much.
Same old, huh?
Yes.
I get that. I had a nice combination day today, a nice combination of, you know, watching a couple movies, so I did some relaxing, and I didn't cook anything for dinner because I just picked up fried chicken from the deli, but I also ran errands, got some cleaning done, you know, just a nice balanced day.
Okay.
Yeah. And as always, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets, even if all they do is just listen in or hang out on the board. You never know. We might have a caller. You just never know how things are going to go. But yeah. And been hot as double H-E, was it H-E double hockey sticks?
88's not exactly hot.
Oh, shut up. It is to me. I'm melting, Rex. I'm melting. I'm like the wicked witch. Yes, exactly. I'm melting. Just like Dorothy just threw some damn water on me. That's right. 88 is hot, especially in October. So, but anyways, I know I'm a wimp when it comes to heat. But tonight we are doing part two of, what's his name? Oh, yes, Herman Melville. And because we ran a big old contest for that. And we will finish that up most likely tonight because we have just enough, not too much, not too little, to make a good show. And then we don't know yet what's going on next week, but whatever you come up with, Rex, I know it will be fabulous. I always look forward to whatever it is that comes out of that brain of yours.
Snake eye undulation.
What's that?
Snake eye undulation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And you never know what comes out of oozing out of those cloves of garlic. All right. Well, what do you say? Shall we go ahead and kick it off? All right. Sounds good. Well, up first, we have Paper Mountains, The Middle by Ben Hart. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Paper Mountains, The Middle by Ben Hart. Paper Mountains. Formed from thoughts, from memories of an existence, the making of a moment, became creation. Impossibilities of being waiting to be believed, waiting for the moon to call their names, and then dancing across Pennsylvanian plains on paper Appalachians as embers and wisps a sway like flame around wick, like mountains adrift from nothingness. Gone. Shadows drift from mobiles, black rain over your cradle. They killed you in their sleep, eaters of dreams that grew like weeds, and you cried out for mother, cold below, but words were lost once abandoned in the quickening din. Love's orbit. Don't tempt me, she says, or I'll love you forever. Which way? He asks, or is this us meeting in the middle? April. So grand were the monuments by which I recalled our love in stone, when so many of our wildest moments were rather timid and small, when we were not gods, eternally binding itself back together, when we were but ragdolls instead, just low tides running back to shore. And so, I am sorry, love, that I spent half our time together still looking back from beyond, in a sense. I'm sorry for how it ended. Nightmares and dreams. Wish. What do you think the future holds? By then, we'll all either have died or wishing we had. Oblivion's eye. Be remembered. Do not slip within oblivion's withering. Don't wear your friends out. Don't let them down, or you'll not make it around the deep dim in the middle, of which light is that iris, and we are the dying, the burning figures. Held. How are you, Ben? I am better at it, fighting the lifelessness, knowing the moment, and don't hurt sometimes. And don't hurt rooted. For the first time in my life, I don't feel like I'm losing you. I am taking hold of what we had to be held then, and never letting them slip from my arms ever again. Loop. Play it back. The pouring rain. Put it on loop and make a pain, not a chain, but a motion. Collapse. You were my all. My heart was your altar. My thoughts, prayer at the temple of you. The dream woven through my waking, my purpose was to prove that the ripple, the pebble, and the lake are one and the same, and that it all at one point had been a tear on the cheek. You were my all, but that was just a dream. Pennies and embers. If this is the end, our end, may I have this dance? Through rain of ember, sway me until fate pays out in peace, and thought pays off in pennies. Swing me through the collapse of these concrete canopies. And we'll put it to these so-called gods that if they made man in their image, why did ever expect our surrender? If this is the end, our end, I am never standing still again. And poem. Yeah, kick it off with a big one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll be happy to do that. Great read there, Rex. You know, Ben was one of the few people to write a new write for this pre-write contest, which I thought was pretty cool. Not that it was necessary for people to do that, as long as they were on topic or fit with one of the prompts. But I thought it was awesome that Ben came up with something new. I also thought it was funny that he says, 500 words if you care about such a thing. Brilliant contest. Wrote this while sick. I needed this. I thought only Ben, only good old Ben, could limit himself to 500 words when sick. But there was not actually a word count limit, although I did ask people to, you know, consider, like, you know, no mega brevity and no novels. And I think, you know, Ben fell within that range. And I feel like with as many of Ben's poems, this is a poem of self-discovery, not only for an individual, but for humanity. And I like the questions asked in the third part with love's orbit. Don't tempt me, she says, or I'll love you forever. Which way, he asks, or is this us meeting in the middle? The idea of there's an irony to those questions, and let's see, what else? I mean, brilliant imagery and metaphors all the way through. Another part I really like is the fifth part with nightmares and daydreams, wish, what do you think the future holds, but then we'll all either have died or wishing we had. Be remembered, do not slip within oblivion's withering. Don't wear your friends out, don't let them down, or you'll not make it around the deep dim in the middle of which light is the iris, and we are the dying, the burning fiddlers. I feel like within those lines of the sixth part is that idea of the music of madness, the intensity and the weight that lays upon you of your own mind, thinking over and over again how it could potentially let other people down until it becomes this huge burden. And then the end line, which says, if this is the end, our end, I am never standing still again. And I like how he brings in the idea of the gods and the mortals and wondering where everything is going to go from that point on. And if this must be the end of the gods, then what now? What new age do we come into? And I might be slightly influenced by the fact that I did just listen to Norse mythology book on CD, but I feel like the ending of that book was along the lines of that idea that going on to the next age, but knowing that those thoughts of ancient times still continue on as a part of life. And I feel like that works well in almost like a literal capacity, like the idea of it actually being like a mythological tale, but also in the way as when we go from one part of our life to the next, we still carry that old part of ourselves with us. And so I think this is just definitely a brilliant write and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. Nice. All right, that first one, Paper Mountains, for me, that's the god, so to speak, because it hits on that idea. Paper Mountains, formed from thought, from memories of inexistence, the making of a moment, became creation. Impossibilities of being waiting to be believed, waiting for the moon to call their names and take them dancing. The idea of the gods being bored in a moment to create man and then waiting for them to offer up that which is homage, something for their clueless, uneventful existence, so to speak. The second one, Gone, hit me with sort of bursts because he's got shadows drip from Mobile, black rain over your cradle. They killed you in their sleep, ages of dreams that grew like weeds, and you cried out to a mother, cold below, but words were lost, once abandoned in the quickening dim. Quickening dim, loss of innocence, and loves all of it. That was a pretty tender one. That note, or is it us meeting in the middle? That could relate to a relationship at the moment, or the thought again, back to the gods. This kind of hits me with like the trials of Hercules, all those little things you have to go to please the gods, because they hold all the illusions and the dreams in their hands, and yet they take them easily. At a moment's glance, hey, we'll make it difficult. This is getting taken away. It hits on oblivion's eye. Be remembered. Do not slip with any oblivion's withering. Don't wear your friends out. Don't let them down, or you'll not make it around the deep dim in the middle of which light is the iris. And we are the dying, the burning fiddler. The idea, hey, you can lumber through life, but if you don't take care of the things around you, that lumbering becomes cold and lonely, and the burning at the end, the burning fiddles at the end. Hey, you know what? Those are tiny violins passing away into existence because you no longer matter in the moment. And the question, how have you been? He's caught hold of something in that stanza of himself coming back again, so to speak. And I like the loop. Play it back, the pouring rain, put it on a loop, and make a pain, not a chain, but a motion. The idea of writing. The collapse, that was kind of a hard one. It's on the idea of death, the end of things, and thoughts pays off in pennies. And then if this is the end, our end, I'm never standing still again. The our end can be a relation, or it could be the end of humanity itself. So I still get it. He's running through the trials of Hercules in his own way.
I like that. Those are some really great in-depth observations there, Rex. Very cool. And now, I guess the question is what do we have next, right?
Yep.
All right. Let's see here. We have Dust to Dust by Garanwy. And it goes like this. Play the game, learn the lines. Why try to understand the truth? Just believe the nothingness of lies made in promises of broken faith. As in the beginning an emptiness, so it will end with an emptiness. Soul by phage and thieves of yesterday for silver at a Judas gate. Looking for never found horizons beyond a west wind setting sun, sensing eternity shimmering between trickling through fingertips, pitch tomorrows that never were, abandoned hope left from past, fled to darkness lost in dreams, turned to nightmares in second sleeps called eternity, made from dust that slept before, shapeless particles with no form, floating, 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 and home.
This is pretty cool. Great read. Play the game, learn the lines. Why try to understand the truth? Just believe in nothing of the lies. Making promises of broken faith. That is a note there to something lost along the way. And the dust to dust angle, at the title, also walks in that note. But I like that second stanza. As in the beginning, an emptiness, so it will end with an emptiness. Sold by Fagin, thieves of yesterday, for silver at a Judas gate. I note of Fagin from Oliver Twist and the 30 pieces of silver that Judas was paid for the Judas gate, offering up silver at the Judas gate. Nice. Looking for never found horizons beyond the west wind setting sun, since eternity is churning between trickling through fingertips. The idea of, hey, you can continue search, but then you let life kind of trickle between your fingers as that life just ebbs away day by day, moment by moment, because you fail to actually live the life in the looking. Then pitch the mars that never were, abandoned hope left from past, fled to darkness lost in dreams, turn to nightmares. Somewhere along the line, you gotta take a good look at yourself. Am I expecting a bit too much? Can I actually get there with what I am thinking, or do I need to reevaluate? And in that note, again, hold that note of dust to dust. Everybody comes, everybody dies. We're born to die and we die to live. And the unfortunate notion of that is most don't actually live in the dying. which is a sad note, because every day is a day of death. You're supposed to enjoy those days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I really liked this one. I did. First of all, it's different in form from Guarani, and I mean, I always like his writing, but I like that he decided to separate his stanzas, and he was another one that wrote a new write for the contest, so very cool there. And I like how he separated his stanzas in order to give the reader the opportunity to pause on and reflect on each stanza. And I, too, really like the way that he mixed in Fagin's Oliver Twist with a reference to Judas, who betrayed Jesus, and also using the word Judas Gate. There's a lot of references to gates there are references to gates in the Bible. I think there was like a story about a beggar by the gate, and you know, oftentimes in many cultures in ancient times, and probably even nowadays, beggars would often sit by the gate that led to a town, because they knew that's where they were most likely to be able to collect. And I like how, and he wrote to the prompt, backward and forward, eternity is the same already, and we have been the nothing we dread to be. I like how the first stanza makes you think on the idea of the fact that the majority of dust that you see in the air or that's in the air is actually made of human skin that has died and shedded. And I like how this speaks, the general tone of the whole poem speaks to me on how time is the greatest of all thieves, that every other thief ever born and that has ever, existed has been, basically small change compared to what time takes away from us. And really a wonderful write all the way through. I do especially like looking for never found horizons beyond a west wind setting sun, sensing eternity shimmering between trickling through fingertips. It's like the sand just falling through the fingertips. And the idea of realizing that all opportunity has been lost and all your regrets must be faced. So, brilliant, right, and very well done.
Yeah. A Judas gate is a very, very large door or gate with a smaller door inset, which you can walk through without actually opening up the larger of the two. And it is said Judas walked through such a gate on his way to meet Christ.
Okay, that makes sense. Very cool. I did not know that. Well, what do you know? Learned something new. Cool. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right. We have On the Mad Road to Greenless Graves by Blue Right 76.
On the Mad Road to Greenless Graves by Blue Right 76. Stranded on a deserted road, resting on outskirts graves, like baked croissants under the sky's own oven. We found coconut water for parched throats, glucose for the veins. Another morning rose dark, years later on the edges of March, when the shutters fell, roads were abandoned, and windows barricaded, man forced inside his hole to save and scrub on rest. Time, hunger, and calamity never did know to be partial, as in birth and death, once that ring smiles and strikes, welcomed and celebrated, another that takes them away, gives them numbness with much to dread. The gods of creation descend every day, scouring through crowded streets for creators like them, food and harmony, creations of life and need that warm the spirit's core. When the gold hoarded sunk the fertile sand, the lazy men went looking for spades and seeds to fill the dots of life, then looked at the hot, cold skies for water to farm their yards. Man took the big jump from the madness of capitalism. Some fell on communism's net. Few float on the capitalistic tails. Democracy did rescue many, yet powerful dragons scout for fuel, the Draculas of war, now in righteous cloaks. Medicated on freedom for the madness of inequality, many a spirit now happily naked yet drunk, drugged on comfort and the surreal, brimming with freedom, shackled to shackle wheels, man rotates in blind madness. The day when eyes closed to memes, styles and jokes, games and fake liberal speeches, they will turn to the farmers, handful of them alive, waiting for the crowd to sweat on lands, not gyms. And poem.
Great read, Rex. And oh my goodness, what a wonderful write by Blue Right 76, who wrote, "To human madness is oftentimes a cunning and most feline thing. When you think it fled, it may have but become transfigured into some still subtler form." And I have to say that this has amazing imagery and metaphors. In fact, I think this is one of the most creative uses of baked croissants as an imagery that I have ever seen. Stranded on a deserted road, resting on outskirt graves like baked croissants under the sky's own oven. I really like that. We found coconut water for parched throats, glucose for the veins. And I like how they set the stage there. And this becomes, the main focus of this poem to me is, the idea of man versus nature, man versus the elements, which was quite often a theme in Melville's writing. And the gods of creation descend every scouring through crowded streets for creators like them, food and harmony, creations of life and need, what warmed the core. And I like how this has the gods coming down from heaven, looking for ones that are like themselves, looking for those that are disguised in righteousness. Man took the big jump from the madness of capitalism. Some fell on communism's net. Few float on the capitalistic tails. Democracy did rescue many, yet powerful dragons scout for fuel. The Draculas of war now in righteous cloaks. That has such a classic feel to it, and yet the brilliant thing is that it can be pulled into modern times and how throughout history mankind has tried to find a sense of freedom and a sense of purpose within the political and economic systems, political, social systems, and have oftentimes failed to do so. And I just an amazing write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you, Ben. Well, it's kind of reached like revelation, end times, deserted road, straight on a deserted road, outskirts graves, like baked croissants on the sky's oven, own oven. We found coconut water for parched throats, glucose of veins. A few still alive, hunting in the wilderness for something. I missed that one. That should have been the Ides of March, not the Eves of March. When the shutters fell, Rose abandoned windows barricade. Man is forced into his hole to save and scrub on less. That hits on the idea of being painted into a corner and told so much shit in fear that you have to bury yourself alive, so to speak. Well, figuratively. Time, hunger, and calamity. Hey, passing of the seasons. For everything, there's a season. God to creation, I like that one. Looking for that, kind of hits on that note of looking for the just the right few in that Sodom and Gomorrah setting, which kind of hits on with this next one, the gold water sunk for little Sam. And this one here, medicated on freedom for the madness of inequality, many a spirit not happily naked yet drunk on comfort, and the surreal brimming with freedom, shackled to shackled wheel, man rotates and blind madness. That's current situation. The back end of this is the whole truth. When all that destruction comes, when all those idiots don't know what to do because they've never done anything in their lives past, and those of what they got, the jokes, the memes, and all that stuff up there, because they can't look past their computers. Now they don't have any. There's a few on the outskirts, a few farmers waiting for those who are still left to join them in the fields and learn how to farm once more, grow their own food, hunt for wild game. And that's the idea on the back end of this. 90% of the, well, actually, a good 90% of the people on Earth, especially all city-bound folks, don't know how to do a damn thing when it comes to hunting, fishing, and growing their own food. And they're going to be the first ones going. That's where that note to the gods walking the streets every day looking for new victims. Hey, you pick up another body here and there along the way. Why? Because they don't know what to do except kill each other off or just starve in the streets. Because they've forgotten the most important factor. Food. And where it comes from. And how to make use of it properly. Thank
Amen
you.
Amen to that. That is so true. That is so true. But, all right. Well, let's see.
Baby on the street, counting pennies in the fly's dead-eye reflection.
Where's that from?
I said they've been counting pennies in a fly's dead-eye reflection.
Yep. Yet, you know, people will lose their humanity over some of the most, that in the end is some of the most trivial stuff.
They'll be the first ones who will grimace at, but will dine on long pork as long as it's available.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I was just thinking. Sorry, I was just contemplating. That's all. That was my contemplative.
Hey, I guess when you're that hungry, the thought of cannibalism will make you do what you need to do.
That is true. That is true. I think if I was hungry enough, you'd look mighty tasty, Rex. So, yep. I would, you know, we would all like to think we wouldn't go that route, but, I mean, none of us have ever been floating on the raft of Medusa or been lost in the Donner Party, so, what can we say for sure, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but Yeah, I'm all I know is if I'm ever on the raft of Medusa, I'm sitting next to the chubby guy. Sorry, that was a horrible joke. But all right. Well, up next we have "The Madness Has Transfigured" by Greg Milhorn, and it goes like this: "A state of confusion as shadows dance through the night. Are there any obstacles that keep me from the light? Truly, who am I again that's talking, hearing a familiar voice? As dementia closes its grip to decline, I have no choice. Strange hands reach out and won't leave me alone. Alzheimer's is progressing through no fault of my own. If I can only lose the madness with visions of black and red, but the old enemy returns as its viciousness does spread. My eyes gaze upon dark waters as lights reflecting in the sky, in the sick bay. It is the madness that transfigured as the night turns into day." End poem.
Thank you, Ken. So this writer does offer up that note. You wonder if they understand the moment before the light blinks out and they're back into that that world where nothing is as it is, because they're rabbit holes and recognition isn't part of that. Kind of hits on that note with this. Truly, who am I again that's talking, hearing a familiar voice? As dementia closes grip to decline, I have no choice. And then the strange hands reach out, won't leave me alone. Alzheimer's is progressing through no fault of my own. Kind of hits on that note of being briefly cognizant, but understanding the drift is coming. The old enemy returns, its viciousness does spread. Eyes gaze upon dark waters as lights reflecting in the sick bay. That note of, the lights are on, but nobody's home. Yeah. Nicely done, Greg. All right, what about you?
I liked this one. It definitely is sad and emotive. And I like how he takes the term madness and brings it in to talk about dementia and Alzheimer's, which is something that pretty much every one of us has known about. I don't think there isn't a single one of us who hasn't either personally known somebody with Alzheimer's known somebody who has a relative or a friend. Me, as I've mentioned before, I used to work at a nursing home, so I knew a lot of people with Alzheimer's and dementia. My maternal grandmother had dementia before she passed away, to the point where she pretty much, didn't even talk anymore except for occasionally like babble stuff. But a lot of times, especially when dementia or Alzheimer's first starts, people get, and even after it's gone on for a while, people get extremely frustrated with themselves. There's a part of them that knows, that something is wrong and that things are slipping away from them. The person they were is slipping away from them. And I like how he mentions that night turns into day at the end. Is the idea to me that oftentimes, and you would find this if you work in a nursing home, or if you visit one, or have a family in one, the people who have Alzheimer's and dementia, there's those middle of the night hours that the symptoms get much worse. It's a very difficult time for people, and how there's a little bit of respite when this, after a certain point, like in the morning, but it's not really, because, you know, they're still struggling. Their family members, their caretakers are still struggling, and it can be just a heart-wrenching experience. And because when you can imagine that when Herman Melville wrote this quote, madness had such a broad theme. Like, they hadn't had, you know, the label of Alzheimer's or dementia yet. Anything pretty much that had to do with the falling apart of a mind was basically labeled madness or whatever other term might have been used. So I feel like by focusing in on Alzheimer's, it not only adds for a very emotive write, but it also brings the concept into modern times. So I think this was an excellent write by Greg.
What's next?
All right, and let's see what we have next. We have Harsh Words by Julie Buck. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Harsh Words by Julie Buck. Mankind is so full of shit, so full of himself, spewing harsh words, taking a big brazen talk. Has him convinced that he comprehends complications. He does not. Johnny came marching home. Johnny, don't blow your horn. Johnny, don't be an asshole. 'Twas that the day you were born? The louder the vocal cords, as never meant said brain absorbs more understanding. And for that, I am so goddamn thankful. There are just some things in this world that are so fucking evil that no way in hell would I ever want to understand any part of it, be it even a bit or very well.
I liked this one. This had full-blown Julie attitude in it from the very first line. Mankind is full of shit, so full of himself. And it's not very long, but between the strategically placed swear words, you know, and the imagery and metaphors, I really like the layered meaning in when she's the lines that go, Johnny come marching home, Johnny go blow your horn, Johnny don't be an asshole, 'twas that the day you were born. I don't know, great rhyme and flow, wonderful reference to the you know, Johnny came marching home song. But also the second line with the Johnny go blow your horn and the idea of people who like to toot their own horn. But I believe there's also a bit of an innuendo in there, and which I find just cracks me up and is cleverly creative. The louder the vocal cards has never meant said brain absorbs more understanding. Those are great lines because, man, I tell you, you know, it is often the quiet person that holds the most valued and sincere thoughts, you know, rather than the one that would bellow like a raging bull. I think this is just a wonderful write by Julian. Very well done.
Thank you, Pina. She took a note of idiocracy. The latter of the vocals has never meant it said brain absorbs more understanding. Usually those who are the loudest, the most vociferous, don't have any real knowledge. Need to be loud and vociferous because they think they need to be heard as opposed to actually understanding even an inkling of what they're offering up, which is usually a gobbledygook and bullshit. So on that note, the back end of it, you can't get past the fucking evil. Unfortunately, it touches you in every way possible, even if you try hiding your head in the sand or dig yourself a pit and cover yourself up to be hidden away. Evil just touches you anyway. You can't get away from it. So you understand a bit of it, even if you don't want to. And most people do understand very well that touch of evil and what needs to be done with it.
Yeah.
Back on you.
Okie dokie, Smokey. All right. Humanity Criticisms by Jesna Sajan. And it goes like this. Well-housed, the rich fixed his mind on delicacies, Well-housed, the rich fixed his mind on delicacies, tunes of an aristocrat. He is pecky on pains of the poor, find faults with their life sleeping on a mat. Well-warmed is he with good clothing in, cold temperatures near the fireplace, talks ill about the poor, boasting to kin. The poor freeze to chilling death in their space, well fed of the mindset by the rich. Materialism, prospects since birth, a generalized version, talk of which, ethereal lack of connection to earth. Whether poor or rich, it's in the mindset. Destructive criticism in early childhood, can the rich get destroyed what they had set? The poor could get rich in their lifespan. Hygiene, habits, and hospitality hermits enjoy the childhood dipping in mud, bask in the sun and rain which permits colorful childhood unrelated by blood. Humanity to humanity is unmasked during crisis or circumstance implored. Donated blood or water is rewarded. Money of the rich or poor is ignored. Family of the poor protect their young from the rich in the name of due work. Dignity preserved and destiny unsung depends on each one and their life work. End poem.
Very dense. I like that line. Colorful childhood unrelated by blood. And that kind of hits with a nice twangy note of the stench of your class walks in on itself and breathes its own core of insignificance. Although first three stanzas hit on that sort of the mindset and how well they're doing, as opposed to the lower echelon of life. I did like that hygiene habits and hospitality hermits. The note to those who are so prescient to the angle of their needs for certainty to be a particular realm. Enjoy the childhood dipping in mud. That's not something they do. Bask in the sun and rain, which promotes, again, something. No, not to be done. Humanity is unmasked during crisis or circumstance employed. Donate blood or water is water. Money of the rich or poor is ignored. To a point, yes. The back end, family of the poor protect the young from the rich in the name of due work. It's a bite at aristocracy, ruling class. Even government entities. They're too outside the norm of the pale of the norm when it comes to everyone else except themselves, considering they dine heartily, drink heartily, play heartily, and get themselves in all kinds of stupid shit. I like it.
Me too.
Well,
great comment there, Rex. I think this is a wonderful take on the chosen prompt by Jesna. And her chosen prompt was, of all the preposterous assumptions of humanity over humanity, nothing exceeds most of the criticisms made on the habits of the poor by the well-housed, well-warmed, and well-fed. And I like how right away she brings us into the mindset of a person who, because he was raised rich, because, you know, he was raised with all these luxuries, can't understand people who aren't. I really thought there are some great lines in this, and it did show the whole idea of the system of classification. And that line that you brought up about colorful childhood unrelated by blood made me think of the saying that it takes a village to raise a child, you know, rather than just the nanny or the you know, or the staff, you know, the parents, the whole family, the rest of the village, you know, all just, you know, taking care of each other. I really also loved in that same stanza, she has the line, enjoy the childhood dipping in mud. You know, that was my childhood, like out in the middle of the woods. Oh, man, if we came across a mud puddle, well, all kids love mud puddles, but, like full-fledged mud. And my grandmother had one of those driveways that every rainy season, it would just get the, like, because it was a dirt driveway, and it was angled in such a way that the water would all gather. So she would get this huge puddle that would practically become a pond because there would be frogs in there. And so, you know, we just loved to run through that thing, gather frogs. I mean, it was fun. But, you know, and so to me, in part, this speaks on the realize that people don't realize that there are blessings that come with not being rich. There are blessings that come with appreciating the simple joys of life. And I really like also how this, where it says, humanity to humanity is unmasked during crisis or circumstance implored. Donated blood or water is rewarded. Money of the rich or poor is ignored. There comes a time, and obviously we all know money is an important resource. There's a lot we can get done without it. But at the same time, there's more important resources. And what really tests humanity is when we're put in crisis or difficult circumstances, and we have to give, or we are called to give of ourselves, of our time. I mean, really, time is one of the biggest blessings you can offer up to people. It's why so often, you know, when I run contests, I not only thank people for their rights, I also thank them for their time. And I like how she mentions the idea of richness being a mindset, because there are people who are financially well off who will truly never know the full richness of life and love and everything that it all has to offer. So just a wonderful write by Jesna, and very well done.
All right. So what's next?
All right. Well, that is the $25 question. So let's find out. All right. It is The Red Dragon Within by Bluesman. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
The Red Dragon Within by Bluesman. Skipping along my neural pathway, I see a fork in the yellow brick road that beckons to my wilder, dark side within mental shadows that forebode. Whispering of cobweb tunnel in the catacombs of my mind where sane logic and reason forced to death, dumb and blind. In the cobalt, lower brain abscess, abyss, within deepest recess of my mind, I hear the beat of a different red dragon slowly creeps towards the innocent forefront of my mind. If he makes it there, intact, I'm dead. All that same will be left behind. And oh.
Great read there, Rex. And, well, he didn't put the exact prompt. I figure it must have obviously been the one to do with insanity, since the original prompt that he wrote to was, I am insanity and I beckon for you. I really liked how he went with the image of the red dragon as a metaphor, a symbolism for insanity. First of all, you know, I think of the red dragon, and it almost seems like a coat of arms, almost like the idea of someone wearing that coat of arms in pride while their brain is falling apart. But it also made me think of the idea of the opium dens, or the chasing the dragon used as a phrase for doing heroin. Wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really like whispering of cobweb tunnels in the catacombs of my mind, where sane logic and reason falls to the deaf, dumb, and blind. In the cobalt lower brain abyss, within deepest recess of my mind, I hear the beat of a different drum, rendering the eyes of sanity blind. And I like those lines, the second part that I read, because of the fact that it's almost as if it's that transition where a person is losing that last bit of the sane mind and is transforming into that red dragon of insanity. So brilliant write and very well done.
Thank you. I'm going to go with the red dragon is that blood-pounding anger that is boiling up to the surface. And once it surfaces, it is uncontrollable because the only thing that is seen in the moment is red. And until that gets abated, it is insanity. Nothing calms it down until the job or the thing that needs to be taken out is taken care of, or you and your insane blood spark have been taken out. That's what that reminds me of. Because you lose yourself in that blood pounding anger. You don't think clearly. Everything is dark. Everything is heated. In the moment, the only thing you can see is that object in front of you, which bites at you, niggles at you for whatever reason.
You know what? I could see that. It makes sense. I was also looking, and apparently Red Dragon is also a film in the Silence of the Lambs series. It's like a prequel.
Well, that's the painting, The Red Dragon, was done by William Blake all those centuries ago.
Ah, yes, that is true, isn't it? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've never actually seen that movie. It looks like it'd be pretty good. But I like your observations there about the red dragon being the representation of the anger that boils up inside and that rage. Then that would make sense with it, you know, because oftentimes when we're in a rage, we go blind. I also wanted to bring out, because I know not everybody's looking at the poem, that he actually chose to write this in red, which, well, I admit that for me, I have a hard time with my eyes reading letters that are in color, which is why I assigned it to you, besides the fact that I, you know, thought it would be great in your voice. I have to say for this particular write, I thought putting the lettering in red to match with the theme of the write was actually a really cool choice. All right. Let's see what we have next. I should do another contest sometime on William Blake artwork. Haven't done that in a while. I think it's been a few years. All right. And up next we have Cover Up by Stephen T. Wellman. And it goes like this. Hate, hate, hate. So easy to hate. Love, love, love. So much harder to love. We dress it up. We mess it up. We are not real. We cannot feel. A mannequin masquerade. We've all been played. Knock, knock. Who's there? Would who? Would you trust a block of wood? The clothes only hide what's on the inside. Clothes do not make the man. End poem.
There you go. That's a different bite. Clothes do not make the man. Yeah. And as far as the cover-up goes, yeah, that is kind of, I know, the sort of covering up because we've lost that innocence of nakedness, which used to be there at one point in time. Hate, 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 so easy to hate. And then, yes, that hard-edged coin is two sides of the very same coin, love and hate. It's such a fine line between the two of them. We dressed it up. We messed it up. We are not real. We cannot feel. The mannequin masquerade, I like that note. It hits on the idea of what society has turned themselves into because of the things they get into and do and get away with because they can do it in the name of anonymity. What about you?
So, Rex.
What?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Voodoo.
Voodoo who?
Voodoo, you think you are asking me so many damn questions.
Well, let me see. I can do one better. I can remember Hardy Corman in Blazing Saddles saying, now go do that voodoo that you do so well.
Right? Oh, man, that's a great movie. I like this. It's a different form than Stephen usually does. Quite clever. I think having so many exclamation points and periods than he usually does really adds to the chaotic feel of the write, which I believe is what it's supposed to have. And it creates that pause. So you pause when you say hate, hate, hate. Like it's this chant and this exasperation. And, you know, I like the alliteration in mannequin masquerade and, you know, how it leads all into, it's as if life is just one big knock-knock joke. Would who? Would you trust a block of wood? Great wordplay there because instead of having wood, you trust a block of wood, W-O-U-L-D, he has wood, W-O-O-D. I feel like it's interesting because it's like thrown in the middle there. He has this almost flamboyant sense of humor between the serious points, like the first serious point being on how difficult it can be to love, especially how difficult it can be to love ourselves, how difficult it can be to love our enemies, and dress it up all you want. A block of wood is still a block of wood, and it's not going to pass for a man. You know, I mean, just an amazing write and very well done. Right. Up next, we have Call Me Ishmael by Nick Baker. And go ahead, Rex.
Call Me Ishmael by Nick Baker. Call me Ishmael, call me Ishmael, for I have a tale to tell of blasphemers and of schemers who might laugh their way to hell, who might strike the great Redeemer if it served the mission well. So strike another shanty mates, another night aboard waits, here way down in the hold, here way down in the hold. Call me Ishmael, call me Ishmael, I'm a whaler to the last. We'll follow Captain Ahab across oceans deep and vast, who against all tides and troubles tied his ribbons to the mast. So strike another chord upon the broken down accordion, and let our fate unfold, and let our fate unfold. Call me Ishmael, call me Ishmael, I shall haunt you in your sleep. Oh, believe I'll raise your fever, make you shiver, make you weep, with the story of old Moby, grand old monster of the deep. Such a horror to behold, such a horror to behold. Call me Ishmael, when I tell you of my woes, and the worst of the Avenger in obsession's deadly throes. And when the seas are stormy, this is how the shanty goes. So serve another round of rum, if folks be past the night is young, there's stories to be told. There is stories.
Ah, great read there, Rex. I love the voice you put on at the end. I like this. I like this a lot because it makes me think how oftentimes old seafarers would sing songs, you know, the old sea shanties, and were oftentimes sung in rhyme. I like this because he uses the familiar opening line to the Moby Dick or the Great White Whale, by Herman Melville, Call Me Ishmael, which I think pretty much all of us, even if we haven't read the rest of the book, know that opening line. And it's nice because anybody who has read Moby Dick, I think will get a kick out of this poem. And even if you haven't, you still are going to get, to me, a great kick out of this poem. The first-person narrative is wonderful, the rhyme and the flow. I love the lyrical quality of having the repetitive line at the end of each stanza. Here way down in the hold, here way down in the hold. And, of course, having Call Me Ishmael at the beginning of each two. Wonderful lyrical quality. He does a fine job of highlighting a familiar story of, you know, Captain Ahab's personal agenda against the white whale that doesn't just pull him down, but pulls many of the men that stood by his side down with him. And I really thought this was clever all the way through, but I do especially like that end stanza with the lines that say, call me Ishmael, when I tell you of my woes and the worst of the Avenger in obsession, deadly throes. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
All right, well, Ishmael means God to hear in Hebrew. A note to the founding of religious attitudes and roots, so to speak. It kind of works with this in that note because having a tale to tell, got to hear the voice of the tale and the trial tribulation to go along with it. But he's also calling forth those to sit and listen to the tale which he has to tell. Serve mission well, so strike another shanty mate, another night aboard awaits. It the shanty company. It's the idea of take a drink, there's more to tell. And then I'm a whaler, follow Captain Ahab, cross the oceans deeper, and there's tides and troubles. And then I shall haunt you in your sleep is a note to an old sailor's angle of this is a deep and harrowing, and it'll be told in such a manner that you will remember the story. I will retell it because it is something that needs to be overemphasized so you understand the terrors of the deep if you go to whaling, so to speak, or at least a particular whale. I like that. And the worst of the adventure and obsession steadily grows. And when this thing is story, this is how the shanty goes. To serve another round of rum, if folks departs the night is young, this story is to be told. This story is to be told. This is an old tar who's been around long enough to know that you serve the young ones, you treat them to a tale, something that they can remember for years to come, especially if they're seabound.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I don't know about you, Rex, but I have to say I just love epic tales of the sea. You know, there's something about those classic epic tales that involve whaling and pirates and adventures on the high seas, and, you know, lost loves, you know, and all that, that just, I don't know, really speaks to the spirit. The good stuff. And up next we have Laughing in Your Face by Betty Page. And Betty was nice enough to supply us with an audio, so here we go.
Laughing in Your Face. I've become unfazed. I'll be laughing when it ends, laughing at the start, heartbroken, alone, helpless, betrayed, abandoned, once again, gypsy. For she is my home, I crawl deep inside her mind to remain in cage, golden bars surround, I swing back and forth, laughing, knowing it's the end. Or maybe it's not. Maybe just new beginnings. Possibly. Who knows? I'm out on the ledge, getting crazy on the edge, ready to just jump. Where will I roam? Will I splatter or just fly? Or will one capture? In a flash, I'm gone, chasing, or will I just run? Will they come get me? For I've no money, just destroyed reputations, bathed in till I drown. I'm numb, yet laughing, heartbroken, yet unsmiling, ready to just move. Where to, though? Where to? Will I lose? All yet remain, no explanations. Where is my hero? Will they all just let me fade? I'm losing my mind. Must I lose it all? My songs, my poetry, my art. Jaded is my heart, yet yes, I will laugh, because now I've gone insane. Madness reigns within. Sorrow, laughter, same. Won't let you see all my tears in the face of fear. End poem.
Great read, Betty. Thank you, Sam Brown. Very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Oh, I like this one. I'm really glad that Betty supplied us with a SoundCloud. You know, she did a beautiful read of that. I thought this was a great take on her chosen prompt, which was, I know not all that may be coming, but be it what it will, I'll go to it laughing. And heartbroken, alone, helpless, betrayed, abandoned, once again, gypsy, for she is my home. I crawl deep inside her mind to remain in cage, golden bars surround. So we have that idea of that gilded cage. You know, somebody left alone, and they're a prisoner of their own thoughts, or they're a prisoner of a life that's a gilded cage, and yet they cannot forget the pain and the abandonment that they feel. I'm out on the ledge, getting crazy on the edge, ready to just jump. Where to will I roam? Will I splatter or just fly? Or will one capture? Those are just dark and haunting lines on the edge of someone who's standing literally on the edge and about to consider ending their life, but also on the someone who's standing on the precipice of madness. You know, of the idea of someone who is about to lose themselves. And where is my hero? Will they all just let me fade? I'm losing my mind. Must I lose it all? My songs, my poetry, art, jaded is my heart. Yet, yes, I will laugh because now I've gone insane. Madness reigns within. But I like how she, you know, there's this idea of the end, at the end of, you know, sometimes laughter and tears both come from the same place. And oftentimes when we face the tears, when we face our worst fears, we will have one of two responses. You know, it'll be the laughter, it'll be the tears, or it'll be the flight or fight response. And it's not until we reach that point of truly being tested, of truly having to depend on our own strength rather than wait around for that hero that may never show up, that we learn, you know, what kind of person we are, what kind of response we give to such trying times and to such rejection. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Well, thank you. That's funny. This kind of had me thinking of something else from God years ago. Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I'd go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind, and they're coming to take me away, Buffalo. They're coming to take me away. Ho, ho, hee, hee, a funny song. My life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their green white suits, and they're coming to take me away. Ha, ha. They kind of hit me with that. And I hadn't thought about that song. I hadn't thought about that song in decades.
That is a great song.
So that basically, which this fits right into that motif, because especially with the once again gypsy crawl inside the mind, that is the cage itself, the mind, the swinging back and forth, the rocking on the heel, the ledge getting crazy on the edge, ready to jump, imagination in the moment, and then the thought of a will I splatter or just fly, or will one capture? The idea of running around the halls of a loony bin, getting chased by everybody who's trying to put you back where you belong in the most. At least where they want you to be in the most. All right, what next?
All right, well, let's see here. Up next, we have Shantytown by Fat Cat. And it goes like this. I walk upon cold cobblestones, not finding shelter from the storms that rage within the black and smoky kettles of the shanty poor and all their splintered, creaking wood-framed houses that would pass for home, except for lack of even simple pleasantries to call their own. How can I face the vile and putrid truth that I am wading through if nothing that I can see or smell or taste or hear or say or breathe can match the anguished mutterings of hopelessly impoverished men or cries of children torn too soon from bloody womb, to face the wretched fate that even those who brave the cobblestones could never think of really facing down around the shanty town, the southern side of shanty town, the side that evil came to know as its sweet lover long ago, yes, longer than the longest long ago, before the white man or the black man or the colors of the many men that came before the start of hating color in the flesh of men, or of their poor and broken shanty towns where crying in the night is all the welcome home left to the bones of all the colored men who felt the hate and bit deep into flesh while choking on their last request. Please let me go back to my shanty town where I can breathe in poor man's air and for a season just be left alone to walk upon the cobblestones I call my home in shanty town. End poem.
Very good. Thank you very much. Oh. It's on a note of disparity, but also it's on, there is a note, even the, even the poorest of people don't consider themselves poor in the moment because they're rich themselves in their community, which they still hold to because they help each other out. So the idea of a shanty town, yes, people look upon it as look down on those with disdain at it, but those within the shanty town, they take care of each other until you get, they did hit on that, sort of a, the darker aspect of that shanty town, usually where all the trouble begins and ends. Usually where they've got the bars and the girls. So, shed a light on it. But this does hit on the disparity between those who have and those who don't. But that note was hit on the, please let me go back to my shanty town where I can breathe in poor man's air and for a season just be left alone to walk upon the cobblestones. The cobblestones I call my home in shanty town. So that note in the last angle here is understanding what home is and who they are within that atmosphere, so to speak.
Absolutely. So I thought this was a powerful write. It has an amazing lyrical quality. Interesting. Here's an interesting fact for you. The world's largest shanty town is in Ciudad Neza, which is part of the city of, I'm not going to pronounce that, but it's in part of Mexico City and has an estimated population of 1.2 million to 4 million. A shanty town being basically not really a town, but a group of people that have created a town where the houses are made of like shacks made out of wood or mud or whatever material they can find. And I like how this has, like I said, it has a great lyrical quality. I like the first-person narrative. How can I face the vile and putrid truth that I am wading through if nothing that I see or smell or taste or hear or say or breathe can match the anguished mutterings of hopelessly impoverished men or cries of children torn too soon from bloody womb to face the wretched fate that even those who brave the cobblestones would never think of really facing. This strong visceral imagery that speaks on how oftentimes we truly don't understand people, and it's so sad that we don't try to understand people, that we just, you know, instead of seeing the value in people because they don't come from the right side of the tracks or because they don't fit into our idea of what a valuable person is, you know, we crush them, we crush their spirits, their life. I really thought this was an amazing write on someone who wants to go back to where people understand them and understand their value, rather than going to where there are those who claim to be better and yet truly don't understand the value of a person. I thought this was a great write all the way through and very well done.
What's up next?
That is a good question. And let's find out. We have Sleepless by Stan Holiday. And go ahead, Rex.
Sleepless by Stan Holiday. Late at night, in the near dark, I stare at an empty page. That's empty, cold, white, and stark, and it's daring me to rage. Instead of that, I sit and think of a lifetime full of mediocrity, which has passed as if a blink. At least it seems that way to me. Needles of my memories keeps pricking at my aging mind. They haunt me with their constant tease of all the trails I left behind. A moth sits around the back deck lights, just as I would if I were him, trying to ignore the fright that the flame is growing dim. Too many loved ones have left now and crossed the river Styx. While the years wrinkle my brow, I frown at lack of any fix. Yet I remain here still, even though I don't know why. And it's such a bitter pill, sleep won't come, although I try. Outside beyond the sliding door, dark is yielding to the door. Another sleepless night like before. Strangely, the sunrise makes me yawn. With sore knees, I slowly rise. Then I cough and stretch a bit, draw a drink with gnarly hand, which has scars all over it. Full daylight flares through the treetops, splash warmth upon my face. And for a moment, time just stops, then resumes in headlock race. One of these days, it will outrun me and chase me to the other side, when loved ones wait anxiously. Until then, I'll just abide. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. And what a wonderful write by Stan Holiday. Great rhyme and flow, amazing imagery. I like the reference to the River Styx. Too many loved ones have left now and crossed the River Styx. While the years wrinkled my brow, I frown at lack of any fix. Yet I remain here still, even though I don't know why. And it's such a bitter pill, sleep won't come, although I try. And I like how this he writes in the struggles of being able to sleep, but it's because of the fact that the mind is weighed so heavily, you know, with the idea that, you know, as you age, you lose more family and more friends. And you keep wondering when, you know, especially if you lose a lot of people you care about, when will it be my turn to cross the River Styx? When will it be my turn to go to that other side and be joined, you know, with those I once knew here in this life? But all you can just do is wait, you know. And I love that he says that in his end lines, one of these days it will outrun me and chase me to that other side where loved ones await anxiously. Until then, I will just abide. So, you know, here's the thought, it told in the voice of a man who knows that when it's his, death comes for everyone, and eventually his time will come, and he will just simply wait patiently for that time. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you. Well, it's not just a sleepless insomnia angle. It also calls for loneliness because there's nobody keeping company, and that could be the onset of age itself, or the fact that everybody has passed on, or most of everybody, but he's living alone in the book because he had some the idea of what was it, moth flits around the back deck light, just as I would if I were him, trying to ignore the fact that the flame is growing dim. Again, reference to death. Too many loved ones have left now, crossed through the six. While the years wrinkled my brow, I frown at lack of any fix. Again, that note of living in the moment, but waiting for the end, so to speak, death. Yes, I remain here still, even though I don't even want, I don't know why. And it's such a bitter pill, sleep won't come, although I try. So he's already given over the fact that, hey, it's my turn, my time, take me. Yes. He's not being given that sense of grace to actually move on to the other side. And so it's like that top, and he says, I'm staring at the page that's empty, cold and white, stark, and he's daring me to rage. Yes, the rage isn't so much a rage as it's almost a note to a reminder of living past his own expiration date, he thinks. Obviously, that isn't quite true. So the idea of that empty page, if he needs more work, he needs to offer up more work before time catches up with him. So I think it's both ways. Insomnia and not being able to voice himself in the moment.
I like that. And I think loneliness was a perfect observation about that poem. Because you're right. It does speak on loneliness. Very cool. All right. And up next, we have the poem Loomings by K. Veronica. And it goes like this. Which grief could have helped us, abundant glimpses tell us, down in the coils of rope, splash watery parts of hope. Instead of pistol and the ball, I take to ship and haul myself and stave to sea to whitewash mind and knee. Now in the soul of man, Leviathan a can, blow foam in wake of hunt for prey per captain's want. A fin, a flail, a flash of white, of might, now flight. O flesh harpoons descend. This mad chase has its end. While waist of ship it hugs, the head each barb it tugs, away the meat for feast by light of this same beast. The horrors of the life hath known on land and strife is naught to whaler's trade when trade has stayed so nobly made. End poem.
Gregory Pan, thank you very much. But it reminds me of a lot of this. Reminds me of that note too. A Nantucket sleigh ride, when you harpoon that whale and it takes you on one of those romping runs trying to get the barbs out. Yes, they stick fast. And the little whaler that you're in with the harpoon man stays fast until the whale tires, and then ship pulls upside, and they pull it along. A fin, a flail, a flash, a white arm of my south flight, a fresh harpoon descend, this mad heat chase has it then. That right there, again, it's the note of this wasn't an easy task, because you were off, went out. It was like a two-year run. You went out looking, hunting for 2 years. They were using the blubber for oil back in the day.
Yeah.
Not to mention something else. I can't remember what it is at the moment. I'll remember later. What about you? What did you think?
Well, I like your observation that it did kind of have that whole Nantucket sleigh ride feel to it. And this was originally written for Lawrence and Mine's contest for In Our Craft is Fallen Art. But because we didn't get to it and because it fits so well with tonight's show, I decided to put it in this contest. It says wonderful rhyme and flow, amazing imagery and metaphors. And I like how she used the tale of Captain Ahab's hunting of the white whale to speak on obsession, to speak on madness of the mind that cannot let go of something. And I really like this all the way through, but especially a fin, a flail, a flash, a white, of might, now flight. On flesh harpoons descend, this mad chase has its end, and yet it does not seem at times that it does. And I like how it works both as a metaphorical rite for the idea of obsession and madness, but also a literal rite, as you were saying, on the story of the you know, the hunting of whales, which, you know, they could, as you were saying, they could be gone for years at a time. And so just a wonderful rite and very well done. And up next, we have An Unidentified Corpse in the Morgue of Maturity by Poetic Debris. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please.
An Unidentified Corpse in the Morgue of Maturity by Poetic Debris. Ever since I was labeled grown-up, and eyes cued, drilling me to dig out that Jen fancied to be there somewhere between my collarbones and waistline. I've been recalling the heroine of that movie I mocked for weeks in my rainbow days. Every time an eye steers away in disappointment, I feel like leaning my shoulders on hers at that shady alley atop a hill of smashed stones and empty beer cans buckled in the shapes of the nasty trash between our lips. As we swoon that snitch of heroin zephyrs and the stench of rotten rats, with every step I wind up following her shadow as it skulks the sludge-crusted corners, hound her hums as they hop to the back of her throat whenever a zombie crawls by or a barking dog decides to call it a day and hit home. Every night, I see myself bleeding on the broken edges of her mirror, tucked in her stacked sheets of shame, hung on a clothesline by her dull, dripping dreams, and throwing up her pills, scene after scene, as the charcoal shades of the sky sweep over the colorful ones of mine, and our horizons blend at a dead end. And boom.
Great reading. I liked this one. I think Poetic Debris is a wonderful poetess, very talented. I like the title, An Unidentified Corpse in the Morgue of Maturity. I like how that title speaks on losing our inner child, of losing a part of ourselves as we come to face the reality of life. Wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really like, I've been recalling the heroine of that movie I mocked for weeks in my rainbow days. Every time an eye steers away in disappointment, I feel like leaning my shoulders on hers at that shady alley atop a hill of smashed stones and empty beer cans buckled in the shapes of the mess we trash between our ribs. The mess we trash between the ribs is such a creative metaphor for taking a look at how the human heart is so fragile, and we've played so many games with it, other people's and our own. And I shouldn't say all of us, but you know what I mean. It's that idea of not knowing what to do with the emotions that beat between your ribs. And every night I see myself bleeding on the broken edges of her mirror, tucked in her stacked sheets of shame, hung on a clothesline by her dull, dripping dreams, and throwing up her pills scene after scene. You know, we mock those who deeply feel until the time comes when we deeply feel ourselves and wonder how we could have ever done that. Amazing, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I mean, it's on the idea of relatability. This person from the movie that she used to mock in the Rainbow Day, it offers up that note of be careful what you mock, because that mock might end up being you. And writes along that very same day, same way, I've been recalling the heroine of that movie I fought for weeks in my Rainbow Days, and then rolls right into every time an eye steers away in disappointment. I feel like leaning my shoulders on hers in that shady alley atop a hill of smashed stones and empty beer cans, buckled in the shapes of the mess we trash between our ribs. Nice set of lines right there as we swoon at sniffs of heroin zephyrs and the stench of rotten rats. Oh, that's a colorful emoji right there. And the every step, she's following in the footsteps because she's put herself in that place because of the fact that she did mock her in the first place. And now, can I say that note of turnabout is fair play? You thought she was someone who deserved that, and in return, you end up being that, which is kind of hits at the idea. It doesn't hit grown-up is a different word. It's not adult. So she hasn't fully matured yet, even though you hit on that note of morbid maturity. It's that some have grown up more than she has, and there's not an understanding between that note. And so she's driven herself into this character that she once played off of and laughed at, and is now the butt of everyone else's jokes. So she's part of the movie itself, and that movie is rolling out in reality.
I like that. Very cool. Very cool observations there, Rex. All right. Well, up next we have Sparks, a parody of Shark's Imagine Dragons, which I'm going to assume you don't know that song well enough to sing this, Rex, right?
No.
Okay. Well, in that case, then, this is by Bryce Allen Moniz, and it goes like this. Ha, 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 ha. Traveled, walk on my road of horrors, bow tying, dying dollars, dressing that drive, metals passionately pushing pedals, cash in on the backs of rebels stoking the fire. Tormenting victims, again, bad businessman, comment they really seem tense, comedian, still making noble amends from your bends, plastered on CNN. Freedom ends. No afterglow when you blow. Competition implode. Burning, clean, acting out, breaking someone's nose. You're hard for some gold, getting pressed by a rock. Trust your weight in the sea and you'll spray them with sparks. Capitalistic chicka chicka boom boom. Materialistic chicka boom. Couples convinced that tiny puddles validate digging tunnels. Bury new beers. Virus profiting off the wisest, carry out different bias, blaming your peers. A big and bladder, bullpen, batter, contend, hair trigger, fingers incensed, forgiven fence, hard-hitting incompetence, consequence, produces losers win, soulless win. New renter goals, merry bowls, disappear like a ghost, necks of kin, puff and pass off that bloody roach. Hardcore, made of coal, finding more in your sock. Christmas Eve for the thieves as you spray them with sparks. The club is jumping, party in prison, a deadly valley, woo, woo. Hot market thumping, typical rhythm rising, tape ticker will bleed. The club is jumping, party in prison, a dead valley, woo, woo, hot market thumping, typical rhythm rising, tape ticker will bleed. Keep it down, the voters sleeping, rest in peace, democracy, another car ride fantasy, reminiscing Kennedy, mad money hunting, enemies overrun by jealousy. I think it's funny your lacking of weaponry. Enter me. Enter me. So pull the bolt with your throat. Keep on printing those notes. Play some skin, purging doubt, and your value grows. King Carl of the world, step, you're hitting the mark. Players play, failures seed, as you spray them with sparks. And I am not going to repeat 150. Oh, I see, 152 was the club is jumping. Okay, well, end poem.
There you go. Thank you very much. Awesome. And I'll bite it everything, especially that note. Too. What was it? Keep it down, the voters please, and rest in peace, democracy, another car ride fantasy, reminiscing Kennedy, mad money, nothing that they don't run by jealousy. I think it's fun, the lack of weaponry. Enter me. So, kind of a fancy. Yeah. The shit is on. It's a bite at everything's going on. Oh, geez. Torment victims, competition and blood burn. Everything is being pushed, pulled, and prodded, poked at. He's hitting on all things. New reds of gold, merry bowls disappear like a ghost, Mexican puppet bed off that bloody roach. Hardcore made of coal, fighting more in this dark. Christmas Eve for the thieves at the spray and whisper. I like it. Something different.
I like it too. Great comment there, Rex. And yeah, you are right. This does have a bite to it. It is hard hitting. It does speak on current times. Great inner and end rhyme. Probably a spot on parody. I don't know the original song, but he usually writes spot on parody. And I like how this takes a look at the idiocy of people. And with some very catchy lines. I too really liked that part that said, keep it down, the voters sleeping, rest in peace, democracy, another car ride fantasy, reminiscing Kennedy. I mean, brilliant lines on the whole idea of how people are basically half asleep. You know, they're not seeing the truth. Another part I really liked was a big and batter bullpen, batter contend, hair trigger, fingers incense, still giving sense, hard-hitting incompetence, consequence, produces losers win, soulless win. The whole idea that the ones who appear to win are the ones who can be the cruelest and the meanest, you know, but in the end, it won't matter for, you know, eventually karma will bite them in the ass. Either that or they'll just get caught with their hands in the cookie jar. I also really like, hey, do you remember the children's book? Hey, chicka boom boom, is there any more room? You remember that one?
No. Nope.
Oh, okay. It's an alphabet book, and it probably came out when my kids were really little. But it was like, that's what that one part reminded me of, capitalistic chicka chicka boom boom, because all these alphabets are, the letters are trying to climb up this one tree until they all get up there and the tree tips over. So capitalistic chicka chicka boom boom is that idea of everyone trying to get to the top till the tree tips over and the system fails. So I thought that was quite clever and entertaining. We only have one more from this show. And so I figure we'll go ahead and squeeze this in. And it is The Bed Stood Still by Blue Right 76. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
The Best Strips, though, by Blue Light 76. Rivers maneuvered through rocks, found pliant sands, dry and thirsty, shouted life at the first drops, wet colors of change, life sprouts in thought, seeds of thought, brought more life every drop of thought. Kingfishers and rooting plants, abundant with exuberance, slowly cleared with seasons, those that never did root. Innocence slowly silted upon, doors open to wisdom, drops of dust and mud, turns to stalking pebble, stones unmovable dither, shone in the sunlight, beauty of clear river beds, floods and drought, cracks opened, then filled, sands that resist fell on. Riverbed of life, crafted in chaos, soon a bank antique, trees rooted, unlooted, stood beside, haven feeding birds, beautiful frogs hopped through, algae patterns unique, the fertile turn, woods and forests. Every bed matures the movement of thought as life travels over on golden gravels and sand, many a fossil marked grave stirred the riverbed alive. After rivers of life and love much embraced, breeze through deep beds stood still, a day after a million, dawns to perceive the bed it is, and not the river. And poem.
Great read, Rex. This was another one from the Henry Miller contest that I thought would fit well with this show. It had wonderful imagery, great use of a river as an extended metaphor. To me, it was a write that spoke on the growth that comes from moving forward and gaining experience. It kind of made me think of the saying that you never stand in the same river twice, because of the fact that the river is always moving forward. And some of my particularly favorite parts was anything slowly silted upon, doors open to wisdom, drops of dust and mud turn to sparkling pebble. You know, when we become open to that idea of maturity and wisdom, we shine even brighter. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Well, the idea of the river itself is often, if you offer yourself as free as that river, that which flows, then that which flows in intelligence and life is then can then be taken in more freely, is the idea I'm getting. And because you hit on that, rivers moving through rocks, finishes out with slowly through the season, those that never did root. That's the idea of if you're not taking a chance to hold on to something, you lose it in the moment. Because free-flowing water can brush things away. Look at it. Innocence slowly silted upon, doors open to wisdom, drops of dust and mud, turns to spark and pebble. The idea of in time, even a craggy rock gets molded into a smooth round stone, which has a bit of color in there, and which then can be held as beautiful as anything else that goes along. The riverbed of life, crack and chaos. There you go. You through the learning curve and up into the 20s and so on. There you go. Down the end, every bed matures the moon of thought as life travels over on golden gravel of sand. Many a false and marked graves stir the river better life. Still, smart enough to understand, mature in not just in body, but in mentality as well. And work at the back end of things. So, great show, Pam.
Yep. Great show,
Rick. Thank you. That was a good week. And thank you, Naomi. I know you went to bed hours ago. Or at least an hour ago. But thank you for the board. All right. We'll do this again next Tuesday. And we'll say a good evening tonight. Or a good morning this morning.